This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Okay, so you know how the cost of a college education seems really high and how it just keeps going up and up?
And up and up. So let's start with a number, $8,200. According to the College Board, that's the average cost for a one-year in-state tuition at public college or university in the U.S.
Here's another number, $28,000. That's what tuition costs at a private college or university. Tack on room and board, and the price tag jumps to about $50,000.
And according to the White House, tuition costs are rising faster than overall inflation, faster than any other sector of the economy, even healthcare.
Which means that student debt is rising as well. About two-thirds of college grads leave school owing, Anthony, this is an amazing number, $23,000 or more. Mm. So President Obama says it's time for colleges to get their costs under control.
You can't assume that you'll just jack up tuition every single year. If you can't stop tuition from going up, then the funding you get from taxpayers each year will go down. We should push colleges to do better. We should hold them accountable if they don't.
So that was the president speaking last month at the University of Michigan. And just this week, his Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, was in town here delivering the same message to some 13 college presidents. We've got a couple of colleges around here, don't we?
Yep.
Well, we're going to hear from one of them in just a moment.
But first, listeners, what can be done to bring down the high cost of higher education? What do you think? What should colleges do? What can or should the federal government do? And is a four-year degree worth the current price tag, especially if it's going to continue to rise? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at RadioBoston.org. And joining us now is Joseph Ayun. He's president of Northeastern University. He's also the incoming president of the American Council on Education, which represents more than 1,600 college and university presidents. And Joseph Ayun, welcome back to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Yeah, thank you for having me back.
Also with us is John Cheslock. He's an associate professor of higher education at Penn State University and a senior research associate at the school's Center for the Study of Higher Education. And Professor Cheslock, great to have you as well. Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
And President Ayun, let's start with you, and let me get sort of straight to this main point. In that cut we just heard, and in his State of the Union address just a couple of weeks ago, the president is putting the responsibility of these ever-rising tuition costs squarely on the shoulders of schools like yours. Is he right to do that? What's your response?
First, let me mention that I really applaud all the efforts that the current administration has been doing to support the students. What worries me is the fact that the public higher education system is being dismantled because the states have been cutting year after year the budgets of these public universities. As a president of a private system, this worries me because 80% of the students in the nation go to public institutions. So the issue of a tuition increase has to be coupled with the fact that the states have been cutting the public operating budgets in a very drastic way. And I think it's going to impact us all because it's going to lead those public universities to privatize more and more. What does it mean? It means that they are going to go and recruit out-of-state students and international students that are paying. So in a nutshell, we cannot divorce the tuition increases that we see mainly in public institutions from the cuts, the drastic cuts that the states are imposing on them.
So the sort of what amounts to the privatization of public education you're citing as an important factor. John Cheslock, President Ayun makes a good point, doesn't he? I mean, I forget what the numbers are specifically, but I mean, there's one example here in Massachusetts. The University of Massachusetts receives $30 million less in state funding than it did a decade ago, and that's not uncommon across the country.
Yes, there's clearly a trend going on across states where state appropriations are declining. And so what happens is college and universities need to come up with new revenue sources. And students are one of the few places they can go to for resources that they have freedom to spend in a variety of activities. And so it really points out a complicated issue that there's two parts of the costs aspect. There's the expenditures that college and universities spend, and then there's the prices that students face. And so what can happen is that prices can be going up for students at the same time that costs are going down for colleges, simply because of really massive cuts in state appropriations. So that is certainly part of the picture of why prices are going up for students.
Well, help fill out that picture. What's another one or two part? What's a couple more parts of it that you want to point out?
Sure. Costs are an incredibly complex aspect of college universities. And so what I'll do is I'll just talk about two general stories that are put forth that are used to describe all the different parts that are present. First of all, there's the sort of cost pressures that are outside of the control of colleges. And that's really due to the nature of education and the demands being placed on colleges and universities by society. And so if you think of the nature of education, on just the core instruction that takes place on a college campus. If you think of a car manufacturing plant in the 1960s and you think of a car manufacturing plant today, you would see a very different scenario. Hmm. You would see a lot of robotics. You'd see it be very different. But a college classroom looks very similar today as it does in the 1960s. And it may be the case that the nature of education is not amenable to those sort of technological improvements which allow us to lower costs in
other
aspects.
So you're still talking about a large body of students, and you have to have professors. You can't have robots. So the costs are going to go up and up and up, right?
Yeah, and so that's going to be part of the picture. And at the same time, we're asking college and universities to do a lot more things. Students, governments, and the public are expecting more student services. They're expecting better accommodations for students, more entertainment for the public and students with a variety of things. And colleges are in a lot of pressure to meet the public's needs and to meet the students' demands and what students want. And so not only are sort of the core activities becoming more expensive, but college universities are being asked to do more and more things, which are also expensive.
But let me ask President Aoun this. John Cheslock makes a great point there, President Aoun, but I just want to ask, do the colleges and universities not have any responsibility for this? And I'll just throw out one idea, and there's been a lot of reporting on this over the years, the so-called arms race at colleges and universities that you see. I mean, enormous investments in facilities and climbing walls and student centers. And on the one hand, you can say students demand these, but on the other hand, colleges and universities willingly participate in this arms race, and that seems to be driving up costs as well.
Yeah, first of all, let me mention that I agree with you. We all have, as educators, a responsibility in this matter. But let me share with you my own experience.
Sure.
I studied in three continents and with three systems. And the American system is considered the best educational system in the world, and because it is a residential system. That means that the students are on campus, that are studying 24/7, and there are various activities, including the extracurricular activities. Now, if you look at what drives costs now, it's precisely this residential model. Now, we are, and I believe that this residential model has been very effective. At the same time, we are seeing now, at an inflection point, and we are seeing various experimentations happening. For instance, there is more and more experimentation with online education or hybrid education, where the students are accessing the courses on a continuous basis through the web and have the meetings in the classrooms. That's the hybrid model. So that we are also seeing colleges saying, if you come to us, you pay full fare if you go for a residential experience, and if you want a non-residential experience, you pay 25% of the cost or the tuition. We are seeing virtual colleges being experimented with. So we are at this inflection point, and it is not possible to say that there is one approach or that there is one price point. What made our system the best in the world is also the fact that we have a real diversity. We have private institutions, public institutions, small liberal arts colleges, community colleges, for-profit institutions, not-for-profit institutions. So it's not possible to look at the system as a whole and say there is only one model. There are many models, and even models in terms of the education. For instance, My own institution, Northeastern, has the co-op and experiential that force us to be in tune with reality. Others are concentrating on the great books, etc. So it is this diversity that allows the students to choose different price points and different approaches to education.
Listeners, we're talking about the high cost of higher education. What should colleges do to bring down that high cost? What can they do? What should the federal government do? We're also considering proposals by the Obama administration. You can give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We've got Joseph Aoun with us. He's president of Northeastern University, and John Cheslock from Penn State University. And Professor Cheslock, let me ask you, what do you think about President Obama's recent declarations about lowering college costs, specifically this idea of penalizing schools that don't comply? I'm not sure what a federal plan would look like that could do that. Can such a plan work?
Well, that idea of punishing those schools that increase their tuition is going to be very difficult to implement. It was actually pushed in the early to mid-2000s by several members of the House of Representatives, and it ran into a number of challenges because who are you going to punish? Are you going to punish those institutions that have the highest tuition? Well, those are some of your most elite institutions that are out there, and so there's going to be real resistance to just punishing the elite institutions. And then, or are you going to punish those institutions that have increased their tuition recently by the largest percentages? But those schools are some of the ones who have done the best in the past at keeping their tuition down, and so it's an incredibly difficult thing to come up with a plan for. And then there's also resistance because it moves into the area of price control, which creates a lot of animosity towards the plan. So I don't expect that to be very successful, just like the efforts in the early 2000s were not successful.
Mm. President Aoun, I wanted to ask you about that same question. If I have this right, you were among the group of college presidents that met earlier this week with Secretary of Education Arne Duncan. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah. And so did you have a chance to listen to the Obama administration's pitch? And what's your, you know, and what were you able to hear and say back to them?
Well, actually, Secretary Duncan was in a listening mode, and he was asking us to help him think it through and work on proposals, because clearly the administration has two ways to go about it, and I agree with John. Punishing the colleges is going to be very difficult to enforce. However, they were looking at us to see whether there are incentives that will help universities and colleges to embrace best practices. And in fact, many of us have suggested some. For instance, one aspect that has been at the forefront of our discussion is the STEM field, namely science, technology, engineering, and math. We have a need in our nation to educate more students in STEM fields. And Secretary Duncan was very taken with the idea of loan forgiveness, for instance, for those who go into this domain. But it is also the case that the institutions, the various universities have been discussing and showing what they have done in terms of financial aid. For instance, in our own situation at Northeastern, over the past 5 years, we have increased financial aid at double the rate of tuition and fees. And at the same time, we are seeing a similar trend happening with various private institutions. And let us not forget that we are in a very global race. When I go to China and I meet with my counterparts in various universities, they are mentioning the enormous investment their government is making. But frankly, they are telling us something very simple. We are not going to be able to compete with you based on wages. In the next 10 years, we are going to out-innovate you and out-educate you. It's as simple as that. I mean, this is almost verbatim. And so in this context, I think the administration has been really looking for the educators to work with them in a responsible way, and we are happy to oblige.
Well, President Aoun and John Cheslock, stand by. We've got a lot of very interesting listeners with some great questions standing by. So let's go to a couple of them right now. Subu from Lexington is calling. Hi, Subu.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Happy to do it. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm listening to the conversation, and I would like to suggest that if I'm working for an employee, I'm going to get paid to the salary that is the lowest anywhere in the world. Otherwise, they're going to ship the job to the people in China or India. Conversely, in order to earn the salaries I get in the United States, I have to be better than anybody anywhere in the world. So if the universities are really going to charge the highest rate per student, then the universities should be accountable to provide an education that makes the students better than anybody anywhere else in the world. And if they're indeed doing so, then the question is why they're not able to get the jobs, why they have to struggle in the marketplace after they leave the colleges. Hmm. So this is a question the educators should think about seriously and find answers for that.
Well, Subu, let me get our experts here to answer that. John Cheslock, it seems like Subu's talking about sort of return on investment. Do American college graduates, are they getting a good return on the very, very high cost that they're putting into their education investment?
What is the case that on average those individuals with a college education do earn much more than those without a college education? But I do think the caller raises important points about accountability with colleges and universities, and this is an area that's very contested at the moment. There's a real push on colleges and universities to provide more evidence that they are effectively educating their students and that students are leaving college with a deeper understanding of material and better critical thinking skills than when they entered them. And so the caller is touching upon a point that's quite important.
And President Aoun, I wanted to ask you about this. I was reading comments that Senator John Kerry made yesterday with Arne Duncan. And he said this: in China, India, Brazil, Mexico, South Korea, and other countries, they're largely focused on competing and winning. And we're kind of still moseying along. Do you think those kinds of comparisons, I mean, does he raise a good point there?
I think the senator raised a fundamental point. There is a clear competition. And let me go back to what Mr. Subu said.
Sure.
I agree with him that in this context, we are in a global race and our students have to be prepared and better than anyone else. And in fact, I believe that they are. They are because in many ways, many CEOs, for instance, at a global level, are saying, we don't care where the person is coming from. We want the person to be ready for the global world. And what are we doing for that? We are seeing, for instance, in our own institution, we have this co-op model that I mentioned to you. We are now with co-op and experiential education in 85 countries. And so this race, this competitiveness is forcing us constantly to innovate and not divorce ourselves from reality. So it's not enough to look at learning as being done within the classroom. It's really the integration of the classroom experience with the world experience. And this is pushing us beyond our comfort zone. So we cannot look at campuses as being self-sufficient anymore. And I agree with Mr. Subu. This is a competitive world. And the students, as a matter of fact, when they are prepared in this way, are finding jobs. Our students, after 9 months, 90% of the students are on the job market. They have jobs. So I believe that we are doing our share, but at the same time, we cannot be self-satisfied because we have to constantly keep in mind the global aspect. And frankly, I can tell you, our higher education system has to be much more in tune with the global reality, and we need to send students overseas to get them comfortable with the world. And that's how they are going to keep winning.
Gentlemen, I want to play another clip from President Obama and what he's saying about this broader subject. Here he is last month at the University of Michigan. Let's listen.
We're telling the states, if you can find new ways to bring down the cost of college and make it easier for more students to graduate, we'll help you do it. We will give you additional federal support if you are doing a good job of making sure that all of you aren't loaded up with debt when you graduate from college.
So, John Cheslock, does that sound like a workable approach? I mean, we started this segment talking about proposals to penalize colleges, but here are sort of offers to incentivize the states to bring down the cost of college. How can the federal government do that?
Well, I think they can do that in two ways. Number one, they can provide enough money that would really encourage the states to meet whatever requirements are needed to qualify for those dollars. And number two, they can the direction in which they're pushing the states can be into sound directions. And so there's clear ways that they're pushing in terms of trying to ensure that states are investing in their college and universities, and they're also trying to encourage schools to be innovative and try to come up with some new ways to deliver education. The trick in this is whether or not the federal government will indeed have enough money to really encourage colleges and universities to change their behavior and for states to change their behavior. And perhaps if they team up with other entities such as the Gates Foundation and Lumina Foundations, which are trying similar tacks, they may have some success here.
Well, let's go back to our callers. Anne is calling from Ashland. Hi, Anne.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
I'm calling because of two points I wanted to make. And one is, earlier your guest said that the college experience had not really changed that much for full-time students in the college classroom from the 1960s. And I wanted to point out that colleges and universities, especially in the greater Boston area, are extremely dependent on adjunct professors teach many of their courses, and their students are paying top dollar to come into institutions, and they may be being taught by extremely qualified people, but people who are not connected to the university beyond just coming in a couple times a week, teaching a class, grading some papers, and leaving, and then going to another institution and doing the same thing as they try to patch together a career without benefits, without any kind of support from the colleges they work for, other than a paycheck at the end of the month. They're not guaranteed a class every semester. And I think students and their parents are being sold a bill of goods about the worth of a college education when we're so dependent on this kind of faculty.
Well, Anne, you raise an important point. I know more and more colleges and universities are dependent on adjunct professors. Let me put that to Professor Aoun. Is Anne's concern valid in your view, Mr. Aoun?
You know, I think the concern is valid, and especially, once again, to go back to what's happening in the public system. The pressure on the public colleges and universities is such that we are seeing larger class sizes, and we are seeing that the student-to-faculty ratio is increasing, and we are seeing also all kinds of ways of approaching this issue, including the one that Anne mentioned. Now, looking forward, I believe that there are now attempts to get to change that. By, for instance, in California, they are investing more and more in a hybrid model, or even virtual colleges that are online. You see, the reason that you are seeing this increase in terms of adjuncts and graduate students teaching, in especially in the public sector, is that the pressure on them has been enormous. The financial pressures, the demand is at an all-time high. The students are applying, and they want to get in. At the same time, they are cutting their budgets, and this cannot be sustained as it is. And they are very aware of that. And this is why I mentioned that the online possibilities that higher education is exploring is going to alleviate this issue too.
President Aoun, I want to read something from Facebook. You've been talking a lot about public education and some of the challenges that public colleges and universities face. Of course, you're president of a private school. Dan Trinidad writes on Facebook, "What are the president's thoughts on the drastic increase in compensation for executives and administrators at private universities?"
Yeah, and what we are seeing here is Once again, a global race. Let me tell you, in the various administrators, the various faculty also, are being lured away to go to Asia, to go all over the world. And this is what's happening now. The higher education is a global endeavor, and the search for talent at all levels. We are not talking only about administrators. You're talking about faculty. You're talking about researchers are being lured away. Singapore, Hong Kong, Taiwan. You're looking at China, obviously, as a primary case, and we are seeing also a shift there. In the past, you know, the first step was to bring back, for instance, the Chinese American. Oh, now it's a search for talent, no matter where the talent is.
So you're really dealing with, it sounds like, a real sort of global arms race there. Let's take one more caller at least, Mary from Jamaica Plain. Hi, Mary, you're on the air.
Hi. Okay, well, I'll try to be very concise because I've been told I don't have much time. Well, there are 2 points to my comments. First, one thing that doesn't get talked about is the high salary of college presidents. One of my daughters went to Mount Holyoke, $500,000 plus the perks, and that's not admissible for me. But then the main point is that no one talks about the true cost of college. It's more than $52,000, whatever it is for, you know, a little college like Mount Holyoke, but no one, even the wealthy, pays the full cost. And it's the middle class, like my family, who are asked to borrow, quote-unquote, against the house to have the privilege to send our kids there. And I have 3 kids. We, the parents, spend $200,000 on education, which means that we had to borrow $150,000 against the house to meet the financial demands. When each one of our kids came out, the last one came out a year ago, with $23,000 in their own debt. And I want to say we are doubly punished in an area like Massachusetts where houses are extremely costly, and thus colleges feel that we have the money, the assets to borrow. And I could not reason with any of these financial robots in the colleges I've dealt with. They would say your house is worth X amount of money. You know, and if you value your kids' education...
I've got to do this. Mary, I really want to get a quick response from at least John Cheslock here. I appreciate the call, and I hear your passion, and I know that your fate is shared by many, many people out there. John Cheslock, I mean, help for middle-class folks like Mary, 3 kids, trying to put them through college. I mean, it is a huge burden. Hard to imagine where this goes the next generation from now, for example.
Well, the caller raises just a number of really complex, difficult points that are hard to develop a nice, simple policy to solve.
Yeah.
But what's also reflected in the statements is just the magnitude and the implications of the problems that we're talking about, that at the end of the day, all of these college costs translate into debt for students and for their families, and there's a real human element to this.
Well, sadly, we're going to have to end this conversation here, sort of leaving dangling a huge riddle that has yet to be solved. But John Cheslock, Associate Professor of Higher Education at Penn State University, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
It was my pleasure.
And Joseph Aoun, President of Northeastern University. President Aoun, thank you very much for your time and good luck to you.
My pleasure.
And we have a link, listeners, to some helpful resources on our website, including tools to calculate how much schools cost and ways to find financial aid. That's all at RadioBoston.org. You can also keep the conversation going at RadioBoston.org. Stay with us. Coming up, the agony of defeat, and Paul Pierce chases a Celtics record. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.